Welcome to No Room for Phonies, episode 91. And because we had so many great stories from Jim and Melissa, we decided to make a part two of more stories. So I just want to read this little poem to you. And the reason I chose it is because it's written by a folk singer and Jim is all over music. So I thought he would like this poem too. So that's why I wrote it or chose it.
In the 1980s, folk singer Mike Jones wrote The Storyteller, a song inspired by the work of his friend Taffy Thomas. Cherished by Taffy for the past 30 years, The Storyteller is reproduced here as a poem, its words perfectly encapsulating Taffy's own thoughts on the art and practice of storytelling.
This is the poem. I'm a teller of tales, a spinner of yarns, a weaver of dreams, and a liar. I'll teach you some stories to tell your friends while sitting at home by the fire. You may not believe everything that I say, but there's one thing I'll tell you that's true. For my stories were given as presents to me, and now they are my gifts to you. My stories are as old as the mountains and rivers that flow through the land they were born in. They were told in the homes of peasants in rags and kings with fine clothes adorning. There's no need for silver or gold in great store, for a tale becomes richer with telling. And as long as each listener has a pair of good ears, it matters not where they are dwelling. A story well told can lift up your hearts and help you forget all your sorrows. It can give you the strength and the courage to stand and face all your troubles tomorrow. For there's wisdom and wit, beauty and charm, there's laughter and sometimes there's tears. But when the story is over and the spell is broken, you'll find that there's nothing to fear. My stories were learned in my grandparents' home, where their grandparents also had heard them. They were given as payment by traveling folk for a warm place to lay down their burdens. My stories are ageless, they never grow old. With each telling, they are born anew. And when my story is ended, I'll still be alive in the tales that I've given to you. By Mike Jones. Anyway, enjoy No Room for Phonies, episode 91. More stories, part two, with Jim and Melissa. All right. So, your greatest survival story.
Our survival or somebody else's survival?
Can be whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you my survival story first, because for people who haven't seen me in a while, they're probably not aware. I retired early. I suffered what they call a lower aorta dissection. And what happens is that your aorta has an inner lining and an outer lining, and your inner lining splits. And so I suffered this, and it started at my kidneys and went down both the iliacs into both femoral arteries.
Down your legs?
Yes, yeah. Down my legs. And luckily it didn't go up, it went down, whether that be good or not. And I came home from work, and I'm like, it felt like food poisoning and kidney stones all at once.
Yeah. Ooh,
and it was pretty painful. It was pretty painful. And I mean, I was rolling around in bed at night, and you went downstairs. And long story short, I finally go into the hospital.
Finally.
And
3 days.
Yeah. 3 days.
3 days.
2 days. And I go into the hospital, and they do a CT, and they come back, and I'm sitting there, and I'm talking to some guy from the new, what was the GE plant at the time, cut himself with a box cutter, and him and I are having a good chat, and, you know, we're having fun, and all of a sudden, I've got four people. Mr. Wright, do not move. We're going to put you on a gurney. You do not move. So they pick me up, and they put me on this gurney, and I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, you need to call your wife. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And she says, you have an aortic dissection. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound great. And she says, and I'm talking to Melissa at the time, and she says, do you have an order? I went, no, I thought I might need surgery for an appendix or something.
Right.
And she says, no, do not revive order. And I say, well, if I'm dead by the time she gets here, she's going to kill me. And so we went through that, and I mean, there was a lot of interesting things that happened. and they were trying to hook me up to all the different monitors that they needed, and they couldn't get them to work. And of course, being the technician I am, I'm like, well, you tried this, this, and this. Why don't you try it in this order? And so I helped them get the monitors working. Wow. Yeah, and they were really concerned, and as they should have been. And they moved me finally over, and the head nurse that was there was a really interesting lady.
Yeah, it's like at one point they said to the nurse that was attending to him, said, do you have children? And I thought, you know, we're talking conversation, right? And I said, yeah, we have two boys. Oh, how old are they? And I told them, you know, and they're in their 20s. She said, they should be here.
Oh, and then you start thinking, okay, this is...
Yeah, but you know
never,
what?
It never dawned on us.
We didn't. I kind of thought, he's okay. I don't know what you're all... Like, it just never occurred to us how fragile his life was at that point. Because I'm like, yeah, I got one of them that's at work and another one that's writing an exam. No, I'm not calling him. They didn't even come into the hospital for a few days. I'm like, there's no point in you coming. Like, we're just sitting here and, you know. We didn't realize we were knocking on that door.
And even at that point, we didn't realize it. And then the inner Jim Wright came out in emergency. And so I'm getting bored and I'm listening to music and I'm looking at the monitor and they have the respiration monitor on, yeah? And I'm going, oh, that's interesting. It looks like a letter. And I'm going, oh, that's interesting. So I taught myself with my respirations how to write hi.
Don't do this at home, kids.
And the nurse comes over and says, are you okay? I said, hold on, I've learned something new. I want to show you the... She says, don't do that. So they moved me up. They moved me up to... they wanted me in ICU, but I ended up in ICU step down. And they had to take me for a couple more tests. And we should have really realized it at that point, because there was like, the nurse would have like a crash cart, like a crash on my feet. And he'd be on the gurney and there'd be two people pushing it.
Right. So and we're serious. This is serious.
This is serious stuff.
You cannot move.
But well, by this time you weren't in pain anymore.
No, the pain was gone because I had morphine
and
Demerol.
And basically they're giving him medication to keep his blood pressure down.
Like crash it.
Okay.
So it's not like he had an IV in, but it's not like you're
two IVs,
hooked up to any machines.
No.
And like, you know, it just
need life support.
It doesn't seem real. And you're just kind of denying that it can be as serious as they're making it out to be.
And I mean, we had a lady there who actually, I can't remember the doctor's name, but she was good because Melissa said, he needs to go to Hamilton. She's like, no, you can't move. And we didn't realize at the time why I couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked to the vascular surgeon and he's like, well, you have a tear in your aorta. And I said, well, it's a small tear. And he said, no, it's not a small tear. It's a large tear.
So in our minds, we went from a small tear
to a large tear.
To a large tear.
Right. But it was not. It was a large tear.
It was a very large tear.
And then all the way down.
Yeah. And then like years later, we find out that it isn't even a straight tear.
No, when I went to see our family doctor, he gave me the report. And he said, oh, no, this is not even this long. This is from here to here, Jim.
Yeah, and like a spiral.
And then we found that out when I was talking to
you. Because after we were together, I read some of the stuff on it. And we're very thankful you're here telling the story.
I'm very thankful.
Thankful.
I'm
thankful is a relative term.
No, I'm 100%. Like I would... Part of me wishes I had understood that at that time.
Me too.
Well, we didn't understand.
We
didn't understand. And it's...
I mean, if you'd said, oh, he had a heart attack, then everybody instantly understands.
That's what everybody thinks.
And the first time she mentioned, or we heard it when we met you at the market or something, and you said aorta, I thought, oh, his heart. No, but the aorta's large.
The aorta actually runs, runs from the heart plumbing. Down and goes down. Yeah, and there's still people who think I had a heart issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I say, the pump is fine. The plumbing is sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, so it's been a huge change in life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were looking at retirement, getting a bigger boat, and I got a tractor. Jeez, that hurt. And, like, just a lot of stuff, like beekeeping, I had to re-engineer how I was doing everything, mm-hmm. and, like, renovations now.
We hire.
We hire.
Yeah.
Well,
we never hire.
But I never hired. Man.
No.
Like, I never hired. And that's been a hard thing for me to do.
And just the fact that he doesn't feel well some days,
yeah.
a lot of days.
Yeah.
And you never know what you're going to get until you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Some days I'm good, some days I'm not so good. And it is, you know, I went and worked for some friends and some cherries, mm-hmm. helping because of, with her family, I had cherries and I worked cherries with them. And so, you know, they were talking to one of her friends and said, you have, you know, Jim's retired, he can drive a tractor, can, you know. And so I go out to the farm to get on a tractor, and her son's kind of skeptical. And first thing I do is I push down the clutch to start the tractor. He's like, you're hired. So
I could do that.
Yeah.
I drove tractors, man.
So I worked cherries for 1 year for him, had a great time with them because with on her farm.
Yeah, I was working with the Hayes.
Yeah. There were antics
nice
going
time.
On because
yep.
every time if
Good
I
people.
Was if I was on the harvest or on the collector side,
mm-hmm.
whoever was one of the big jokes was you bring in a tank of cold water, right? And the person on the collector side would always get splashed. And so I'm telling Isaac that he said, you know, on the other farm, whenever it was a big joke to splash the conveyor operator. And every time I come up with the tank, he was off that machine and out of the way. it was great. I had a lot of fun with them. They
so
were
how
fun.
Long
but
were
it's
you
but
in
as but as much fun as he had doing that, the next year he wasn't feeling well
it.
Enough
to
do
up
it.
To,
right?
I was in the hospital.
About a week.
Yeah.
Only. Yeah, about a week. It was Christmas Eve, I think. They're like,
yeah.
No, or the 24th,
23rd? They sprung me Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
yeah.
it was...
But what were your instructions when you went home? Don't move?
Oh, God, Pam, I still have restrictions. That I'm... there. I wasn't supposed
the,
to...
The key is to keep the blood pressure low. So he monitors his blood pressure a lot.
Okay.
And no heavy lifting and not a lot of core
twisting.
And twisting. And
yeah.
Okay.
But having said that, having... you know, 3-4 years out now, and he's had MRIs. It's stable.
Okay.
So I don't think it's in. I don't think it's in fear of tearing anymore.
No,
it doesn't really heal itself either.
No.
So, like I was saying, the false lumen. So when it splits, there's an artificial channel between the inner and outer lining.
Right.
And sometimes they heal, sometimes they don't. But because I had so many CT scans with the radioactive dye in that first 2 years, they don't want to do it. So they just do it with ultrasounds.
Oh,
but I'm curious to know if things are healing up.
Right.
Because that changes everything. I mean, believe it or not, Jim Wright is going to a gym now.
Oh, yes.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah.
Is that the Generations one?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, they actually have one in Welland, and I didn't know they had another one in the fall.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Because I just went to the falls today. Because of your encouragement, we called there when my back was bothering me Monday. Fabulous place.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
They're great.
I
went in to meet my trainer, and I saw physio people coming in and out of all ages.
Mm-hmm.
And Melissa had gone there.
Yeah, I've been going for about 2 years.
Yeah.
But
and telling him that, you know, you would be great with Mark. He would be, and he's...
Is Mark a physiotherapist?
He's a
personal
trainer. And then finally, he goes and sees Mark, and he comes back and he goes, that place is great. Like, it's not a Ken and Barbie gin.
No.
I'm like, no,
no.
Why didn't you?
No, and...
like, we're Ken and Barbie.
They have...
yeah, that's
they
right.
They have a nice... there like
yeah,
they
would,
do yeah
I would like to do Aquafit in the
yeah it's great
because I mean I obviously I paid
Melissa can
dollars.
Come you get your pool noodles out and she'll She'll whack.
Yeah, I'll come here. I'll come do run good, you through the aquafit in your own pool.
That's good. I should put a course out and have all kinds of people there at the pool. But yeah, I'm very impressed.
Yeah,
with
they
your
were,
facility.
And Mark's been really good. Yeah. And then when I had my gardening accident, where I tripped on over the trailer tongue and popped my knee out and popped it back in, and so I was off for 3 weeks. I think I went, this is the first time I've been back.
3 weeks.
And he was really great because he's got some physiotherapy background. And he was like, when I first contacted him, I laid out the whole thing. This is what happened to me. This is what they told me. These are my restrictions. This is what we have to be careful with. And he was great. And
that's
fun. You know, and he's, and he, and it's helping. So now instead of fixing the other problem, they're fixing my leg.
Don't you worry, honey. You got plenty of problems they can fix.
They've got lists. Yeah. They're going to fix with you. Yeah.
That's a good time.
All right, so we have a second survival story.
Second survival story. We used to do a lot of canoeing, and we had friends who would canoe with us, and sometimes they had girlfriends and sometimes they didn't. And if you remember Grant Crooks from the print shop, he looked like a biker, hair down to here, had a brand new tattoo. And so we go, and Melissa and Grant, we're in a tandem canoe, we're in Algonquin Park, and I'm in a solo canoe. And so we're paddling together, and we go through the first portage, and we get, and the weather's kind of looking funny, so we decide to camp on Smoke Lake, and we pull into a site on Smoke Lake, and Grant and I, being the men we are, decided we needed a nap. And
before
the weather hit, you know.
Well, the tents were up.
And so we go, we're having a nap, and all of a sudden Melissa comes in. She's like, there's kids out on the lake, and they are in trouble.
So I had been watching them. I'd watched two canoes go past us where we were camped, and I thought, oh, man, I'm glad I'm on land and not still
canoeing.
And
we're experienced.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, there was two more canoes out on the lake, and they were all kids. Turned out they were, I think, 12 to 14-year-olds, and they had three in a canoe. They'd stopped paddling. They were just kind of holding the gunwales.
It was whipped up.
And as I watched them, the wind kind of picked up the front of the one canoe and was moving it around. And so I ran, I called to Jim and Grant, and then I ran down to the shore and said to the kids, pick up your paddles. Come on, paddle in.
And I went over land to catch up. Well, Grant helped get them, collected, and so we get.
The two canoes that had gone through earlier were their guides.
Were their leaders?
They were from a boys' camp, and they were their guides. There were four canoes in their party, but they'd left
because they were looking for a site.
They
were looking for a site.
They just left them.
Yeah, and they weren't. And when we got them back, they weren't willing to stay with us. And Melissa understands that because of her girl guide experience. But we finally convinced them to stay.
To camp with us.
To camp with us.
Because, I mean, it's 6 o'clock. It's dark. It's raining. The kids are hungry. They're cold. They're tired. They're
right. But they're scared.
Yep. But they're scared. Yeah.
And so we get them, and Melissa cooks all their stuff for them. And then the questions start. Well, why is there only three of you? There's only three of you. How come? And I'm like, well, I said, well, we really can't discuss it, but yeah, we just do this. And they go. And then 5 minutes later, well, why are there only three of you? And I'm like, look, I really can't tell.
This is weird. This is weird.
This is weird. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A guy and two girls,
okay.
And Grant's in his own tent. Like,
right,
you know,
yeah.
And so they start, and I'm like, well, we're therapists, and Grant's our patient, and he's our patient, and we think this is a new therapy. We're trying this new therapy, and we think getting people into the outdoors is good for them. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they're like, and then that wasn't good enough. Well, what did he do? And I was like, look, I really can't tell you what he did. And of course, Grant, we've known each other for years, like, you know. And he's listening, and he's picking all this up. And so he's got an ear out because he knows I'm spitting a story. And they're like, well, what did he do? I'm like, I really can't tell you, but he was in prison. And so they're like, oh, he was in prison. Because he looked like he was in prison, right? Oh, yeah. Grant's such a nice guy. Such a nice guy. Looks like he's in prison. And they keep going and they keep going. And I'm like, look, there was an incident with his family and an axe. And he happened to murder him. I said, whatever you do, don't leave an axe out anywhere.
I'm sure it will be fine.
And the axes are gone. And the axes are gone. For a couple hours, and they're all sitting around the campfire, and one of them splits wood, doesn't put the axe back, and Grant picks it up, and he gets all their eyes, and he goes, haven't seen one of these in a while. Chomp! Into the end of a log. They all jump. We start laughing our heads off, the three of us, and they were like, oh, that was so funny.
Oh, it was so funny.
And then it started raining during the night.
Started raining in the middle of the night. And I...
So what were they sleeping in?
Well, they had their tents. They had their...
Yeah, and we're with them. They had their tents. And they didn't know any better. That they were just teenagers. And I'm spinning a story. I had a great time. Yeah.
So it starts pouring rain that night. And I wake Jim up. And I said, my butt's wet. And he says... your butt can't be wet. I said, I think I know if my butt's wet and it's wet. So he lights the lantern. He goes inside the tent. And we're like in this little indentation. And the water is just lapping up on the side of the tent. So he gets the oxygen. And he trenches around the tent. And he makes this trench and goes straight down the hill and into these kids.
Because they were down on the lower part of the site.
So we wake up in the morning and we're dry, everything's fine, we're good. They're soaking wet. And they're hanging up their sleeping bags.
But
we left them that morning and we thought, oh, we had a great time. And then as the days go on, the matches got wet. Grant's matches got wet.
Oh,
and
hold on, hold on. There's a preface to that. Melissa bought waterproof matches. And put them in a case.
I did.
Not knowing that windproof, waterproof matches will not strike on anything other than the case they come in.
And you took them out of that case to put them in plastic.
To put them in the, yeah. So Grant's now going through his matches, and any ones that are left are kind of damp. And we're like 3 days in. And this one, I discover my matches won't light.
That's hilarious.
He's like trying to cautiously hold the matches that are left, and you know, so day five we are out of matches.
And Grant hasn't had a coffee.
Nobody's had a coffee. Grant
has smoke.
A cigarette. we're like eating Tang. So about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we come through a portage. Grant and I were through first, and we see two canoes going across the lake. They're not coming to us. They're going across the lake. And they had the name on the front of the canoes, the same as the boys' camp that we rescued a few days earlier. I'm like, Grant, get the canoe.
So we're getting some matches.
that's exactly what happened.
We're paddling out across the lake, thinking of all of the things we're going to say to them when we get there. We're the Algonquin Park Peace Police, match police. How many matches do you have? That's too many. Hands, I'm over. We settled for, do you have any matches that you can give us? Because you owe us some. When you get back to your camp, you just ask your other group why. But believe me, you owe us matches.
Give us all your matches.
So that's our survival of others story.
Oh, my goodness. That's good.
That's, you know... I
would love
hate
to meet those young kids. Oh,
I would too. One of them, it was so cute. We're around the campfire that night. He says, when you came down to the shore to call us in, I just thought you were my guardian angel.
Little did they know her.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I had an experience at Christmas. I was in a Sobeys. It was really busy, and there was. You know, they were backed up right around.
Yeah.
And I'm in there and there's a lady in front of me with a toddler, right? Grandma with a toddler. And the kid was just, he was just an angel. And so I'm talking to her and I'm talking to the guy behind me. We're all kind of kibitzing and the kid's being great. And he gets up to the cash register and then he starts having a fit. She pulls out arrowroot and gives him an arrowroot. And I say to her, I've been a good boy. Can I have an arrowroot? And she said, yes, you can. Here's an arrowroot for you. And the guy behind says, well, what about me? And gives Him and Arrowroot. So the moral of the story is Arrowroots will solve all the world's problems.
Yes. Except if you're gluten-free.
Yeah, and they're not gluten-free.
As we use Arrowroot flour all the time.
If they just didn't put the regular flour in with the Arrowroot, it would just
burn. Well, I fooled Jim, let me tell you.
Yeah, because I was going to bring my prop and say, here, we can solve. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that to Charles.
I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, well, Charles said he could have Arrowroot flour. And I'm like, Jim, if those were gluten-free, believe me, it'd be plastered across the front of the box.
It would be. It would 100% be.
But that's my lesson at Christmas.
Arrowroot can solve the world's problems. So what do you think is your greatest accomplishment story? That's
kids,
always hard.
Our kids. It's also our proudest moment story.
Yeah.
My one proudest moment story is when I was working in my capacity and doing suspensions and expulsions. You remember I used to say, we send out those lists. I got a call from Crossley and going, and I had done a training and I had written up some crazy thing about Brian. You know, running down the halls and skateboard and hurling.
I remember that.
I get a call from the school going, I don't remember Brian doing this. And I'm like, well, what does it say? Knowing full well, I forgot to erase it, right? And they're like, well, it says that he was riding a skateboard down the halls and throwing stuff at teachers and just being generally rude and disorderly. And I'm going, eh, that sounds like Brian. And she goes, no, that can't be Brian. And she says to me, Jim, your kids are two of the nicest, most well-mannered kids in this school. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That was a proud moment, and we've done our job.
Yeah.
Yes, we have. We get frustrated sometimes.
We get frustrated. Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about kids.
Yeah.
So you had two boys?
Two boys, yeah.
And we met.
You had Steven, the older one.
He's the older
one.
He's the older one. I'm not allowed to drive his car.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other one is the electrician.
Who lives just around the corner from me here.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're both, you know, they're doing
Yeah,
great.
They're making their way. You know what? They never really gave us any grief, you know.
No,
well, you know,
either.
Skateboard on the new floor aside.
Oh, that was bad. That was almost as a non-survival story.
I had to send them to their rooms so that I didn't do something I would regret. Just go to your room. Mother needs to have some time to come down.
They skateboarded all through our laminate floors about 6 months after I had installed them.
Shit, it scuffed them permanently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. They didn't know it was scuffing them, but I came home and I'm looking. I'm like, what's happened here? Well, we were skateboarding. I'm like, you were what?
What? When did you think this would be a good idea?
And I'm like, we were so mad we couldn't even talk.
Yeah.
So you've been in our yard. So the punishment was they had to go out and pick up every single pine cone on the property.
Really. We're very proud of our boys.
We've done really well.
For lots of reasons. I was thinking about something about each one of them. Brian was in Air Cadets, and when he was 17, I guess, when he was an instructor at the, where did we go for that, Jim?
It's on baseboard and up in Barrie.
He was given the top cadet award at the camp, and there's almost 3,000 kids at the camp.
As an instructor.
So that was a huge, huge deal. And we were very proud. I mean, we're proud of him every day. But that was just one of those that just took our breath away that we couldn't believe that it happened.
Your kids do that to you, right?
They do. And they teach us stuff all the time, don't they?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
No, the other day, Sebastian was driving to Deerhurst, for a job. And he called and I was, really, really upset about this pool liner thing that we went through, and he said three or four things, and it was just wow, did I raise you?
You're
so
scared.
Did
he talk you off a cliff?
Yeah, he kind of talked me off a cliff, which we've all talked our kids off cliffs before.
Right.
Okay, my favorite Zachary story, honestly, is Ross School. He's in grade two. They're putting on the musical.
Herb the Gardener.
He's Herb the Gardener, but that wasn't the musical. It was called...
Then we're missing the...
Then the name of it, whatever. It's something about flowers or garden or whatever. So he comes home all of a sudden and he said, yeah, well, I have to learn all these lines because I'm in this play.
Yeah, so he was the lead, whatever.
But we didn't really realize he was the lead. No, no one called and said, your son is 8 years old and he needs to learn all these lines.
Seven,
and he's the lead in the play. Like, you'd think the teacher might call and say,
practice,
you
work with him.
You're Dorothy.
Right.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, so we didn't really realize yeah. that he had such a big role in this play. So we go to the play, but in the meantime, we get his report card, and he has a C minus in drama. So we go to this play, and he's like the lead. He's 7 years old. He has all these lines. He's the lead in the play.
He delivers them all.
He delivers all his lines. Excellent job, whatever. And so the play's over, and I see the drama teacher.
I'm sorry to laugh out loud like that, but I know.
So I make this beeline for the drama teacher, and I say, wow, didn't Zachary do a great job tonight? She said, oh, yeah, he did a fabulous job tonight. And I said, wow, isn't that great for a kid who got a C minus in drama? Wait, are you a freak or what?
He didn't say
and what did she say?
She went, and I said, he shouldn't have got a C minus in drama if he is that good. Like, if he's able to do what he's doing right now on the stage at 7 years old.
Wow.
But he was bored.
He was bored, and he was mouthy, I'm sure, because that is Zachary. Mm-hmm. And my other favorite story of Ross School is me going to an interview with the principal and the French teacher about both boys, because they're doing extremely poorly in French. So I go to this interview, and the French teacher said, well, you know, Sebastian, he is like mouthy and this and that and everything.
Stop talking,
has an attitude. I
thinks
said,
he knows everything.
That's not Sebastian. I said, do you even know my kids? Like,
the and then she said, and Zachary's quiet and won't participate.
I said, you're mixed up. Like, she didn't even know who was who.
Wow.
Hello, I know my kids. Yeah. This one's not.
Wow, and then they had lost all these marks. I said, why did they lose these marks? Well, they didn't write their names in their cahier. So I pull up the French curriculum and I say, where does it say that there's an assessment
for their
writing their names in a cahier? Well, I'll give them better marks.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll change the report card and I said, and it'll be based on what?
Oh,
I'm making us happy.
See, it's hard. It's hard, even for me as a non-educator. I didn't go to interviews because of the capacity
I
worked.
Very rarely.
I wouldn't go because if I disagreed with something, I could argue it, even as a non-educator.
Yeah,
but
no,
with my background, right?
And I went very rarely, but when I went.
Yeah, you knew there was trouble.
God help the teacher across the table, because I was just brutal. Like the day I went for the math thing, and I said, I've looked at your test, none of that is in the grade 7 curriculum. She went, oh. I said, I know the grade 7 curriculum, you're not testing the grade 7 curriculum.
Oh my goodness. That's brutal.
But yeah, I would say that our biggest accomplishments and our proudest moments have already been around our kids.
And then Stephen's moment was a moment of survival.
Yeah.
And when I, on Old Highway 8, he was going to his work placement and a car came out in front of him, three teenagers, and he managed to get my Silverado around the front of him.
Wow.
And she tagged him behind the back wheel, spun him around. And
otherwise he would have T-boned them.
He would have T-boned them in that Chev and killed them all.
Oh. Yeah.
And the father says, I don't know who taught your son how to drive, but they did a good job.
Yeah. Said thank you.
And thank you so much.
Yeah. And it didn't, again, until I thought about it afterwards, I thought, oh yeah, that would not have.
He just thought on the moment.
No, he wasn't. He called me and he said, I'm all right, Mom. but my truck is totaled. Yeah. And I'm thinking, your truck is totaled? Oh, that, like, that's a significant accident.
Years ago, yeah. Yeah. So, wow, because, yeah, you're totaling a truck.
Yeah,
exactly.
She hit him.
Yeah.
In the, like, she was, like, literally, he went around her, like, into the other intersection. And he went around and she tagged him and blew all four tires on the truck, bent, took the shackles right off the back end.
Oh my goodness.
And it just shows, you know, like
I said to Jim the other night, I don't think I would have had the presence of mind to do what he did. And, I don't think I would have steered around. I think I would have hit the brakes.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been enough.
No.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time with Stephen. Like, we used to go into Austinux all the time, and being the good father I am, driving the big pickup truck, I used to bring him down through Effingham, so he was steering through all the corners.
Yeah.
And then I would, really compassionate father I am, I would take him up St. Paul Street in a full-size pickup truck to get into Flogging McQuaid, so we would get...
Right, yes, you know, get used to.
And I, sorry, but whether... You know, the authorities don't like it, but I used to take him out and make him skid, how to control the skid and do all that stuff. And it paid off.
Yeah.
And just that he had that presence of mind to see that spot that he could get around.
Also the judgment of speed, like knowing that he would be able to do.
Right.
Because he had that.
Don't you sometimes when you hear your kids talk and everything and you kind of hear yourself in them and you're like... Okay, so despite the fact that they didn't seem like they were ever listening to a thing they actually, like...
Yeah, it does. It pays off.
They do in a good way, but that really brings to mind another story.
Good.
It's one of the things was we sailed. Like, we didn't take them to Disney. We didn't do a lot of things. And we sailed with them. And I bought a little Mayflower. And they could sail that. And we went up to our friend Franz on Oxton Lake. And she had a little sunfish. And they go out on there. And they would race out, these two kids in these little sailboats. And we used to go, oh, she go, Jim, you better get ready to go out in the boat. Looks like Brian's going to tip her over. And we go out. And they did that for hours and hours. And then Brian and I got ourselves in trouble. Because I went out. And he wanted the smaller sailboat because I had to get it rigged up. So we're out in the middle of the lake, an Oxtongue Lake, just before you go into Algonquin.
Idiots.
So I said, Brian, this is what I came up on a run. I said, we're going to go on a run. So that means your sails are perpendicular to your boat going downwind. And we're going downwind. And I said, what we're going to do is I'm going to lay my sail on yours. And then we're going to exchange boats in the middle of the lake.
So what a great idea, son!
So we exchanged boats in the middle of the lake. I jibed, which means I brought my sail back the other way. And she's yelling from shore, she's having a fit. And I jibed and I handled that fine. And oh yeah, it was great.
Idiot. See, well, now, our family holidays were mostly just cottages.
Yeah.
And hiking and.
Yep.
We took them, the big trip that we did as a family was PEI.
Yeah. Oh,
and we
nice.
Went and rented a cottage on Cardigan Bay. And we stayed there for basically 2 weeks. No, we didn't do Disney.
We were lucky because I met Fran and Dawn I was probably in grade 8 in all those years. The summer I worked up north between 12 and 13, I helped them build their house.
Okay.
So I kept in touch with them, and Dawn passed suddenly, and both their kids were out west. So we became friends.
Like, family, adopted
family. Yeah. And so we were up there a lot, and they got to go in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I remember the one day, Sunday morning comes on, and they're talking about the top 10 drives in North America for fall colors. And I hear Stephen there, and he goes, there's Nina's! As they went into Algonquin Park. And it's like, they just take it for granted.
Yeah.
That, I mean, we never did the travel thing.
No.
We went north.
Yeah.
And
we
did.
That's
and
what
it's
we
just
did,
it's just a different way of living.
Yeah.
And you don't... And you don't get it until you see something on like a top-rated news channel on CBS Sunday morning. You
know? Yeah, Don and Nancy Beamer have a cottage in Wilberforce.
Okay.
And so some summers we would go there. Be fortunate enough to have time at their cottage. And sometimes we'd go to France and bounce them back between the two. And it was great.
Yeah.
We were lucky. And we took them canoeing. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome. That was an awesome experience.
Well, you took Zachary on a
boys trip.
Boys trip.
To the sand dunes down by Port Dover.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah. And then and then it never worked out for me to take Sebastian somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, he wants to take us boulder, like climbing.
Oh. Yeah.
Like belaying. Really? So anyway.
So we're gonna go
indoor. Indoor, belaying.
You got to start.
Yeah. So
we'll see how we go.
You need to come and beekeep with me because the finger's really strong.
Well, we both knit and crochet.
So. Yeah, you should have. You should be natural at beekeeping then because you got the claw, right?
Yeah.
So he wants to, for his birthday this year, he wants to plan a time when we all kind of go and he has his belaying course.
Oh,
so
cool.
So he can belay us all.
Nice. Oh, really? That's
nice.
Nice.
So he wants to do that.
That's awesome.
Oh, that would be great.
Whatever. We are willing, you know, when it comes to your kids, right?
Yeah.
You do pretty much whatever.
Yep.
You can keep talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's just really interesting.
Well, I just always feel like our kids have kind of, you know, they're making their way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Like they've launched.
They're working hard to make their way.
Yeah.
And that's what's important.
You know,
hard work, yeah.
And it's not as easy to make your way now.
No, it is not.
As it was when
were doing it.
I don't feel it's very easy to make your way.
No, I think there's so many pressures on them now.
And it's everything just costs so much. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I mean the 50s to 80s in North America is a phenomenon that isn't going to be
occur.
Like in Colombia, it was never that way. Even like it's a class system, but I lived with middle class status basically. That's where my parents landed at went in their system, and so I had a lot of middle class friends. But I also had a lot of the level down is called working class, even though everybody's working. But the middle class are able to save and have a mortgage, but they're a smaller group, or they used to be a smaller group.
Wow.
And the working class, where you work, you buy your food, you feed yourself, you rent, you have rent, you pay for a roof for yourself, and then your whole life, you never are able to save.
And that's what started to happen in North America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and their children, even the middle class children, live at home till they get married, and they get married late, 28, 29, 30.
Wow.
There's none of these like young things getting married.
Right.
But even when I lived there 30 years ago, that was the case already in the middle class. And the working class, definitely, you didn't live.
Yeah, well, that's what we're seeing.
They're like, what do you mean? When I told them like I was getting my own apartment at 24, they're like, wow, what kind of job do you have? I'm like, I'm teaching part-time at two different universities. Wow. Apartment. I said it's one room, and it's nothing special.
Right.
And they were like, "Oh, that'd be so cool," because they were going to live with their parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Sebastian.
Zachary because he went to university. So we helped him launch there. But by second year, he was living together with friends, and then with his girlfriend. And once you have two tenants, two incomes.
Yep.
It's a lot, but Sebastian's doing it on his own.
Doesn't
have
anybody.
He doesn't.
Right.
And he's in a studio apartment in Hamilton, but he's paying a lot in rent.
Yeah, that's a lot of rent.
He's paying a lot in rent. And, you know, he's doing really well. And his job now, like, he actually gets some bonuses based on commissions based on certain things.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of extra money that comes in here and there. But yeah, it's a hard slog when you are doing it on your own.
And you know, it's different because even when we were teenagers, You could work on a farm. Mm-hmm. You could always find something to do something. You can't do that now because farmers, I look at the equipment running up and down our road and I'm going like, holy crap, that's $1 million tractor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why they have family.
Yeah, that's it. I've asked all my questions unless anybody else has.
What did he say? Nothing. Sorry to cut them off. We are never sorry to cut them off.
That's very good. We are not. No, that's you worry about your kids, right? That's why we're happy that, you know, we can somehow, we were thrilled for Sebastian that here's a story. Like, he had planned this big trip to Utah climbing, and then he got sick, like really sick.
Not a respiratory virus thing that was going
on. And he could not go. So he did lose some, you know, like he didn't lose his flight or anything, but he bounced back.
Yeah, you showed me the pictures.
Which is what you want your kids
awesome.
To do, right?
Yep.
He bounced back. He replanned the trip. He planned it even better because he rented this indie camper van.
That was so cool when you showed me the. That was so cool when you posted. That
but
was
you know,
awesome.
if they don't have challenges, if they don't have setbacks along the way, if everything runs too smoothly, then you know sooner or later in life, there's going to be challenges.
And
so if you learn how to.
And I mean,
deal with
there's
them.
A fine balance, right, with parenting of, like, you don't want to rescue too much because they do need to figure things out on their own.
Now we're at the point where we listen, I think. I don't think we have to rescue.
You know, sometimes I'll say, well, I said, do you really want to know what I think?
Oh, they don't want to know what I think.
No, thanks, Mom.
Well, Brian actually called me in the middle of the night a year or so ago.
Oh, with the ring.
With a dilemma.
Of the ring.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
You cannot tell the story.
Oh, that's right.
But there was a dilemma.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jim's like, it's 2:00 in the morning. And I'm like, yes, and my son needs me.
I know. But that is.
I was glad that he would be. That he would call, right?
We do,
and we appreciate those
calls.
We do.
I mean, and just to kind of close things off as far as talking, but did you not always talk to your kids a lot as little kids too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, were you not a family that talked about things all the time?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so therefore you plant those seeds of, we talk about things, we're here, you know, and that's, and we kind of taught our kids, like, even when they didn't really necessarily want to talk about it, that we kind of...
That's what our family does.
Yeah. That's how we are.
And and they know know if they need help, they can call any time of day or night. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do whatever it takes to do it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my proudest moments was when Zachary called. He was 19 and he had been at university for 3 months. And he goes, Dad, Mom, thank you for being such hard-ass parents because I at least know how to be an adult. Nobody else here knows how to be an adult.
That's awesome.
And we were like, okay.
All right.
Because I was the hard-ass mother in the neighborhood who didn't allow her kids to do stupid shit all the time. Like, they had to behave.
Yeah.
And...
Well, I was always the authoritarian one. And what did your mother's group used to say? The daddy. They used to call me the daddy.
The daddy.
The daddy. Don't mess like that because the daddy will come and give you heck.
That's funny.
Well, thank you very much
for sharing
stories.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. We're going to continue to hear stories because I have this feeling that there's like many more under the surface that we don't have to mic them all, but... They're good to share.
There are layers.
There are layers.
There's so many things.
Yeah, everybody is interesting.
Yes.
Everybody has an interesting story.
If you give them the chance to tell it.
And we're fine. Like, I think that's probably been the most interesting thing about this year and with the podcast is that we decided to, like, find people and talk to them. And we have had some really, really interesting stories shared.
Yeah.
That's great.
not by famous, like none of us are famous,
right?
But we have great stories.
But it's life experience, and I think the thing you see in all the people you talk to is they're outgoing.
Yeah.
They're not introverted. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid to talk to other people. Because there's so much pent-up anger in this world.
Yeah.
If I can find a way to make somebody laugh, I'm sorry. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's, I think that we have to do that a lot. We have to do that a lot more. We have to be vulnerable enough to tell our story, because it does make a difference.
Yes, it does. You know, and I really like it I've been going to this one pharmacy for a long time, and they're always very professional, professional. And I walk in one day, and the one pharmacist says, "Well, there's trouble." And everybody starts laughing. I'm like, who you been talking to?
I can relate to that. I got to tell you, though, like, whenever I needed a laugh, like when I was at the Ed Center for a meeting, and I was thinking, geez, this is like
the
most boring thing I've ever attended in my life. And I would just open up the door, and there you are, like, working your butt off, trying to get stuff done. And you actually were doing stuff, making a difference, and making everybody laugh.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you. Yeah. We try to do that. We go places, and like, I know this is, we're taking dance classes.
I know.
Oh my Lord. And it's just a riot. It's just a riot. It's a riot.
Well, we might be taking some dance classes. We might be calling you, because we might be taking some dance classes this winter.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Somebody's got to learn how to follow.
Oh!
You'll
fit. And we end on that note.
Gauntlet.
And the gauntlet has been cast.
Thank you, guys.
That's good. This was fun. A lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to No Room for Phonies.
I hope you've enjoyed all of the stories.
And we're not sure where we're going on July 15th, so that'll be a surprise. We might have a guest, we might not, but
we'll try our best.
But we will be, one thing is for sure, we will be back for episode 92. 8 episodes from 100. Pretty good, eh?
That's great.
Thanks for joining us on No Room for Phonies.
Good night.